Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on New FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. On the show today, I'll be joined by Mark Bright. Across an excellent career, Mark played for such sides as Crystal Palace, Sheffield Wednesday and Charlton, amongst many others. Mark has recently released his autobiography entitled My Story, From Foster Care to Footballer, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Mark. Mark, thanks so much for talking to us today.
No, thanks for having me. Thank you, Patrick.
So, Mark, going back to your young days, was it always your ambition to be a footballer?
Yes, right from the start. Just reading the magazines, watching bits of what I saw on TV, sort of led itself to when I was 16, I think it was. I was in class, last class of the day. The teacher was just going around the room, pointing a finger, saying, "Stand up, what are you going to do when you leave school?" Gets to me, it's Bright, yes sir, stand up, what are you doing at leave school? Football, sir. And everyone starts laughing, repeats the question, I say, "Football, sir." And he said, "Right, Bright, stop it, what's plan B?" And I said, "Plan B? I don't know, sir, what is plan B?" And he said, "Right, stay behind after class." And then when everyone's gone, he said, "Right, now everyone's gone, stop showing off, right, I'm a bit worried about you. All she keeps saying is you're going to be a footballer, you don't work hard enough at school, you don't study hard enough, you know, if you're not a footballer, what is your next plan?" I said, "Sir, I don't have a next plan. I'm going to be a footballer." So he then just said, "You know, I can see what you're like. I don't want you to put all your eggs in one basket and you're going to be disappointed." So it was kind of off you go. And then, 10 years later, well, I'm 26, something, I'm playing the FA Cup final. Get to the final. We get to the Wembley Stadium. There's all these envelopes waiting for everybody. And I opened one and it said, "Mark, I'll be the proudest man in Stoke-on-Trent when you walk out. Be a winner, Mr. Arkle." So the teacher had obviously tracked my career and watched, and obviously you end up realising that dream, but you end up realising how lucky you have to be.
Yeah, and the title of the book, Mark, is From Foster Care to Footballer. And if you don't mind, I might ask you a little bit about the circumstances. Do you mind just telling us a little bit, what was the circumstances that led you to being placed in care?
Yeah, obviously my mum and dad had three kids, my oldest sister Marie, my older brother Philip, myself. There'd been separation. Our dad, our mum had us all, and she said to her dad, "Can you look after the kids while I go to a wedding on the Saturday?" So he said yes. So she said, "I'll pick the kids up on the Sunday." And on the Sunday, when she didn't come over to get us, our dad walked us back over to where she lived in Stoke-on-Trent. And there was a note on the door, and it said, "I've had my turn, it's yours now, I'm off."
Yeah.
And that was our mum, so she just left. Our dad couldn't look after us, obviously, he was trying to work at the same time. We end up in care. Our mum goes and gets our sister, but leaves us. Some reason, and then we get fostered out. So that was the start of the sort of like the disagreement between our mother and father, which then led to our dad virtually leaving the area, starting off somewhere else, and then leaving that area, Manchester, going to Burnley. So it's a sad situation, but I'm sure loads of other people experience that in life too.
And is that something, like reading that early part in the book, Mark, it's very inspiring, like the fact that you achieved so much. Was that something that you're conscious of writing the book, that people that are reading it can be quite, that might be in a similar situation that you found yourself that's inspiring?
I think so, Patrick. I think if there's anybody in care who's wondering what the future holds for them, then, you know, if they read the book, they can see that it doesn't necessarily mean to hold you back, you know, that you can achieve. You know, you have to work hard, you have to obviously dream, think big, be ambitious. Not everybody will achieve their goal. I mean, I don't think I totally achieved my goal in terms of I wanted to win something, but in terms of getting from where I was to where I got to, you know, there are only sort of like 3,500 professional footballers each year, you know, in I think Scotland and England. And it's an elite brand of person, a player who makes it to that level. So I'd like to think that, you know, I set out early to be a professional footballer and I worked hard at it when things didn't go my way. and I got released from Port Vale and went to Leek Town, then most people probably thought, well, that's your chance gone. Mm. But I continued to work really hard, then got a break, came back to Port Vale, had one season, went to Leicester, had two seasons, then went to Crystal Palace, where it all clicked for me. So you're learning along the way all the time, and you never have to lose sight of it. There are obviously moments in the book where I say that I wasn't sure I had what it took, because I had some setbacks, which people have setbacks in life. You navigate them, you know, they're hurdles, you get over them, and you still got to see the finish line and see where you want to get to. So yeah, I mean, there's the many sort of like chapters in the book, and they're ups and they're downs, but you have to still believe in yourself. That's my message. Still believe in yourself. When, you know, I look at people like Marilyn Monroe, Steve Jobs, Chris Akabusi, all these people grew up in care, Roman Abramovich. There's some very, very famous people. Cher, I think she grew up in care as well. So, you know, these people achieve. They're going to be successful and achieve, and there's nothing stopping anybody who gets brought up in care from going on to achieve their dreams as well.
And one element of care, and in your case, Sam, from reading the book, I was just amazed by the foster parents you had. They were just, you really, really pay a brilliant tribute to them.
Lucky.
And they seem to be just real, like you just seem to be lucky that the people, I'm thinking of the Davises in particular, they just seem to be lovely, lovely people.
My grand and granddad Davis, we called them grand and granddad because they were in their 50s when they fostered us. They'd had three sons of their own, Malcolm, Victor and Granville. And I dedicated the book to my gran, really, because, you know, she's major inspiration. My granddad passed away quite early. Both of them, in fact. My granddad gave us values and, you know, being on time, don't go into debt, don't spend money you haven't got. Do everything right. If you're doing something, if we give you a job to do it right. You know, if you go take the litter out, do it right. Make the fine in the morning, do it right. They hold you in good stead for the rest of your life. So my gran and granddad gave us some great values, did their very best for us. You know, they weren't our mum and dad, but, you know, I couldn't have loved my gran any more than I did. And that's why I dedicated the book to her. And we realised how lucky you are to get, you know, these woman-loving foster parents, because you are not their responsibility. You're you're somebody else's responsibility. And the people who had you, they're the people who should feel responsible for you. They should bring you up. They should nurture you. They should teach you values. But they don't. They abandon you and leave you, and it leaves it to somebody else who is good in life to pick up the baton, if you like, and run with it. And so, you know, when it's coming to the end, when my granddad passed away and then my grand passed away, you just realise how lucky you are. We're lucky that we had them. And also we had Nana Parton as well, and our real grand, Nana Clark, who also played a part in our upbringing. So, as you saw, you've seen before, you watch the TV and there's some horrific stories of kids who've been in care and get abused and things like that. And my brother and me realised how lucky we are to get the great foster parents that we had.
And Mark, a lot of people will remember you from your Crystal Palace days and that great partnership with Ian Wright. How special of a time was that in your career, particularly that partnership with Ian Wright?
Very, very special. You're lucky if your career can match you up with somebody so compatible, you know, on and off the field. You know, where you're great friends off the field and a great partnership on the field. Both of you have very, very similar thought patterns and ambitions. And there's a year or so between us, and we both wanted to get to the top, and we both wanted to play for the highest level, both wanted to play for England, both wanted to win the FA Cup, you know. And we shared those moments when, in the old days, you used to have two to a room when you played away from home, two players sharing a room, and you'd talk at night before you go to sleep about, you know, scoring the next day and how we're going to play, the two guys we're going to play against. And, you know, you live, eat, sleep football. And obviously played with Ian Wright at Palace, and, you know, five great seasons together, and we just got better and better because we understood each other's game. We worked hard on the training ground, and we had good teammates around us who made things happen so we could score goals. So it was just a great period. In the old days, when I was first started playing in the 80s, everybody played 4-4-2. You know, there was no other way of playing, so everyone had great strikers. or they had partnerships, you know, McAvenny and Cotty, you know, Dalglish and Rush, you know, Cascarino and Sheringham. I mean, you just go on, York and Cole, you just go on, you know, everyone had a pair. And so we tried to pitch ourselves against other people and see who could score the most goals and keep a tally going over the season and say, oh no, you know, he scored again, or Dalglish scored again, or Rush scored again. And we're always way behind those. But what we try to do is, you know, try to get 20 goals ourselves and see, you know, see where we could go from there.
Yeah, and 1990 FA Cup final, I think that was a remarkable achievement, reaching that final, particularly beating Liverpool in the semi-final, because that year you lost 9-0 to Liverpool earlier in the season. What gave you the strength? Because it was an epic semi-final. What was it about that day that gave you that belief that you could beat them, because Liverpool were so good back then?
They were excellent. They're like they are now. They've got it all back again. They had they had swagger. They had good players. They played good football, and they punished us in September when we went up there for the first time. You know, we got promotion 9-0. We got humiliated, and so obviously when it came to the semi-finals the next April, Steve Coppell was saying, right, everyone in the country thinks they're going to switch on the TV. They're going to be the first live FA Cup semi-final televised, and they're going to watch us get hammered by Liverpool. Mm. So he devised a plan. We were without our best player, Ian, because he had a broken foot. And, you know, he devised a plan to go one up front, five in midfield, four at the back. And, you know, we went 1-0 down, but then in the end we turned it around 4-3, you know, extra time. It was an amazing game and catapulted us into the FA Cup final. And, you know, we beat the best team in the country. So Manchester United, at that stage, were still on the rebuild. They were still looking for their first trophy under Sir Alex Ferguson. Mm. So we didn't fear them as much. We kind of thought, you know what, we've beaten Liverpool. They are the best team. And, you know, if we get Man United in the final, we don't care, because we think this is our year. We're destined to win it. And unfortunately, we were almost there. And Mark Hughes scored to equalise 3-3, took us to an extra extra time, and then a replay, which we lost 1-0. So we didn't quite pull it off. We were close, but you have to take advantage on the day, as everybody knows now.
Mm. And you subsequently, Mark, you moved on to Sheffield Wednesday, and you seem to like FA Cup semi-finals seem to suit you. And one special moment, you scored the winner in the Sheffield Derby when you're playing Sheffield United. That must have been because they're the sort of games, if you lose, it's a horrible, horrible feeling. But so it must have been special to get that goal in that semi-final.
Yeah, very special, I suppose, because, you know, we had the better team, the better players, you know, and the Steel City Derby was taken to Wembley for the FA Cup semi-final, quite rightly so. We filled Wembley, and you know, it went to extra time. We felt we had the better team, but it was 1-1, and I'd missed a load of chances at the game, and there was a little argument after the game when we sat on the halfway line, John Sheridan just saying, if you'd have scored one of the 10 chances you had, this would be over.
Okay.
So we had a bit of a little exchange, and then Trevor, the referee blew the whistle, and we went to play extra time, and Trevor Francis just put his arm on my shoulder and just said, you'll score the winning goal here. Mm. And I just jogged onto the pitch, and John Hawkes crossed the ball from a corner. I just remember I was free, jumped up at the near post and just headed it down as hard as I could. And as soon as it left my head, I knew it was in. You just know as a player. And I just shot off and jumped in the air, and it was a feeling that it's very difficult to explain, even though we're still a bit of time to go. I just felt it was the winner. I just knew it. Mm. And then, we kind of like, it was a great celebration, you know. And then obviously we met Arsenal in the final, which was a difficult game for us because of the way they played under George Graham. But the scoring the goal against Liverpool in the FA Cup semi-final in 1990, and then scoring the winning goal in 1992-93 was a great feeling for me, even though we didn't go on to win the final.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, before I let you go, Mark, you then went on to Charlton, and that was an epic playoff win to get up to the Premiership. Did taking part in that game, did that kind of help you? Because I imagine losing them them finals, it's an awful disappointment. But you had a bit of success in playoffs. Did that kind of lessen the blow of losing them finals?
Not really, Patrick. They're separate games, aren't they? But what I found at the end of my career, I kind of finished on a high. Mm. You know, I'd kind of got promotion, you know, when was it with Port Vale, we got promotion, then we got relegated the next season, then when I went to Palace, we got promotion, played in the FA Cup final, won the Dennis Bater Systems Trophy, and then finished third in what is now the Premier League. So, you know, you leave there, you got Sheffield Wednesday, played in two Cup Finals, the FA Cup final, the League Cup final, and then, you know, right at the end, you played at Charlton in this epic 4-4, you know, 7-6 on penalties, playoff final. Mm. At Wembley against Sunderland. So I had good spells, good moments at each club, but the feeling after that, to get that club promoted, was unbelievable. Yeah. It's just a great high, and you know, I was grateful for it as well. I was like, you know, 35 years of age, surrounded by 20-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 21-year-olds, you know, people who've got legs, and drove the team on, and you're the experience, and just, you know, just had a great time at Charlton, two and a bit years at the end of my career. So I really feel fortunate that, you know, I've had good moments at each club. Mm. The memories have kind of like could last forever.
That's great, Mark. Listen, I appreciate you taking the time. Your autobiography, My Story from Foster Gear Footballer, it's available now. It's a really, really cracking read. We've only scratched the surface this evening, so it's definitely a great Christmas present if anyone is looking for a good sports book over the Christmas period. So once again, Mark, thanks a million for joining us today.
Patrick, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's great. That's former footballer Mark Bright joining us to tell us about his new book. That's pretty much this for this evening on Beyond the Back Page. I'd want to give a sincere word of thanks to my guest today, a former Premier League footballer, Mark Bright, that joined us this evening. He was talking about his new book, From Foster Care to Footballer. I was reading it over the last couple of weeks, and it's a really, really, really great read, so highly recommend it. And it was thanks a million for Mark for taking the time to talk to us today. If you want to listen to more sport on Neo FM, you can tune in to Fergus, who has his usual Saturday sports show this Saturday at 10:30, and he'll also have his results show 8 p.m. on Sunday. You can listen back to any of our shows from the last year. If you go onto the Neo FM page and search Beyond the Back Page, you can listen back to any of our previous interviews. We've some really, really good interviews done over the last year or so. On our social media channels, you can give us a follow on Beyond the Back Page on Twitter. But that's it for this week. Thanks a million for listening in, and I'll talk to you at the same time next week. Until then, enjoy your sporting week.